Hey everybody, Dave Hodges here, host of The Common Sense Show. Thank you so much for joining us. And again, once again, thank you so much for your well wishes. Yeah, I don't know what I had. I would have said it was COVID, but I tested negative. But I've come out of it now, and I'm going to do the quarter mile, building back to my half mile a day in the pool. And so everything's good. And thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you so much for showing care and concern. It's greatly appreciated. And one apology on our end, too. As you know, we represent Alexa Pure Pro Water Filters, and they are out of stock. We're looking for a workaround. I'll let you know. And yes, I've gotten all your emails, and I'm sorry. But honestly, folks, I did warn you. I said we're going to have shortages that we're not in control of. But along those lines, we still have plenty of storable food, and we're one of the few storable food companies that's still standing. There, a lot of them have greatly cut back operations, or some aren't operating at all any longer, and it's a big universe. We need all of them out there at full capacity to help people prepare for what's coming. They are going to use famine, starvation against us. It's been really clear, made clear, and it's even been, those words have been used in Congress. Biden's warned us, and so I'll just say this: go to preparewithdave.com. 25-year shelf life. It's not restaurant food, but it's food you can live on, and it tastes just fine. I've tasted it, and you need to get as much as you can. I used to say, well, DHS says 6 months. Okay, guys like Bob Griswold, who comes on our show a lot, as you know, say 2 years. I'm saying right now, as much as you can afford, as much as you can carry, because I don't know how long they're going to apply the full court press to where they cut our food supply off and we have to go to them. So we're good little soldiers. So go to preparewithdave.com. Then one last thing, too, is you've heard me talk about 10 days ago, I went back to Noble Gold for another readjustment here on our portfolio. And it's not that we're wealthy, but everybody, you know, who works and is saved and so forth has a nest egg. And I don't trust that digital currency is not going to wipe that out, and Biden's not going to go the way of Trudeau and take the savings of people who are in the system, who he doesn't like politically. And it may not be Biden. It could be his descendant, whoever takes over. And I don't want to give him that chance. So I went back to Noble Gold, and we did some readjustments and more diversifications. They have a multitude of complex programs, and they never pressure you. So I'm going to give you a way to contact him. Tell him I said to call. If you just want material sent to you, you can go to goldbeforelate.com, but you'll have to call them. They will not call you just because you ordered material. They're not pushy. And or you can call them directly at 877-646-5347, 877-646-5347. And I'll say this warning again, leave your money in the bank at your own risk. Right now, we're trying to maintain operating capital about 2 to 3 months. And I'm just saying, if you leave it in the bank, you better be prepared to lose it. And you need to make adjustments to get yourself outside the system as much as possible. And you know, on our TV show, we're doing a series right now on where you can take money to escape what Biden might do that's similar to Trudeau. And we are looking at foreign markets, and we're making those reports on our TV show. I'd encourage you to follow that. You need to diversify domestically, and you need to diversify internationally if you have the funds. And I can't be more emphatic on these points. You are living in a Bolshevik, communist, satanic regime. And honestly, they don't care if you live or die. In fact, I think actually they hope most of us die. So take the appropriate action. That covers our show for commercials. And I wanted to get it out of the way up front. And I hope that you take advantage and you're able to take advantage. But we have a special guest, and we have Tim Alberino on. And I first heard Tim speak in person at the Branson Conference. And wow, in fact, my wife and sister-in-law went. And my sister-in-law said, he was my favorite speaker. And a lot of people say that. And he's, I'll just say this too, as someone who's taught research at a fairly high level and written courses, his research is second to none. His best out there that I can see. And that's not a platitude, folks. That's a fact. But I've been reading his book off and on and keeping going back for further reference. It's called Birthright, and we'll talk more about that. But it's written so I think people with a sixth grade education can read it, even though it's extremely well researched. So I asked him to come on and talk about some of the important issues of the day related to his research, because we're kind of on this nexus right now where on one plane we kind of see, you know, fallen angels and what comes of that and demonic spirits active today on the planet. And then we have the physical realm, the geopolitical, and the two are coalescing together now. And I think this is a very timely discussion. And I think we can no longer just consider the physical or the spiritual. We have to consider the whole enchilada, so to speak. Tim, welcome to the show. Glad you could join us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, the one thing about your book that scared me the most, and it did, it gave me a great pause, when you talked about the alien threat. And we're getting a glimpse into the alien threat from shows like Tucker Carlson. Are you surprised that there's mainstream media penetration in this now?
Well, I believe that the phenomenon itself, the UFO phenomenon, is forcing the hand, forcing the Pentagon's hand to have to make some admissions that they probably would rather not. And they're scrambling to get in front of the story, to control the narrative, to control the information. The UFO phenomenon is becoming more aggressive, and it is adopting a hostile posture, which is an alarming development in ufology. And what I mean by that, in the past, there would be sorties between our fighter jets and UFOs. There would be occasional encounters with our battleships, with UFOs coming up out of the sea and things like this. But now it's increasing to where the craft are now apparently, according to the Pentagon, have been tailing our fighters more frequently, have been following in close proximity to our battleships, there's even reports of some of these craft, these advanced aerospace vehicles, hovering above our secret military installations. So I think because the phenomenon is becoming a little bit more aggressive and hostile in its posture, that the Pentagon is being forced to try and control the narrative because it can no longer be covered up. It simply can no longer be covered up. There's too many people out there, and I'm talking about airmen and seamen, too many people out there in the military with smartphones. And it's not difficult to capture an image or a video of a craft tailing a battleship. And so these are the kinds of things that are happening. And there's a boldness now on the part of some of these military personnel to come out and speak, because again the alien presence is becoming more conspicuous, and I think I personally think that the government is, and when I say the government, keep in mind that even if we talk about the Pentagon, the programs that have taken place under the auspices of the Pentagon over the last decade, the ATIP program, for example, are somewhat of a dog and pony show. There are not many people, in my estimation, working at the Pentagon who know more than your average ufologist about the topic of UFOs and aliens. The people who know, who really know what's going on, are part of what I call the dumb state. Not the deep state, the dumb state. And when I say dumb state, I'm referring to the deep underground military bases. I'm talking about the military elements of the military industrial complex that are interfacing directly with aerospace contractors like Lockheed Martin, who are not investigating UFOs. No, they're not investigating UFOs. They're reverse engineering UFOs and have been for decades, maybe even interfacing with some of the alien species like the Greys. Those are the people who know what's going on. Your average person working at the Pentagon knows almost nothing. And so it's two levels of of knowledge that we're dealing with. We're dealing with the public knowledge in terms of the interfacing with the Pentagon about UFOs, the stuff that the Pentagon is disclosing is stuff that we've known for years and years. But the real stuff that's going on behind the scenes is there are very few people at the Pentagon who are in the know, because it's a need to know situation. The President of the United States does not have the clearance to go to the S-4 facility and view the saucers that they have, if they still have them at that facility, or whatever facility they have them at. The President of the United States does not have the clearance.
Is that where I've heard that the President's on
the Chiefs of Staff, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, probably don't even have the clearance themselves. It's cosmic clearance. It's and so it's a very strange situation.
It is. I'm going to throw something at you here, and this maybe will go nowhere, but it's deeply troubling to me, and I've got a neighbor. That's interesting. It didn't come from me, but I heard it. Anyway, continuing on, and we're used to this when I talk to Doug about little noises come in. One time I was interviewing Doug Thornton, and the theme from the NFL came in. it just never ends. But I live out, at least I used to, we're kind of growing, but I lived out in the middle of nowhere, northern Maricopa County. But west of us, about 10 miles, is the Toyota Proving Grounds. And I've got a neighbor that's all over this now, and he's become a good friend. And he actually provides some security service for me. But I have seen personally troops in carriers going into the facility wearing woodland camo. And this is so out of place. And it's the most secure area. You go to prison if you fly a drone over it. The security is just, the guards are armed with M16s, and there's, for a year there was construction. Every morning you'd see it at 6 a.m., a whole line of trucks, miles of trucks would come out, and they'd be carrying dirt and stone and so forth, and then that would be at night, and in the morning they were going in empty. So clearly they're excavating. And then we found a place where Gates is developing this super city, supposedly a super city west of Phoenix, an area called Buckeye. And it has all these underground entries. And my friend got pictures. And he came over yesterday and we sat down and looked at them. And I think it's part of an elaborate tunnel system. From what you know, do you think this could have anything to do with alien interface interaction? I think they're clearly tapping into the tunnel system that exists. When you hear a story like that, what do you think of?
Well, it's entirely possible. Of course, there's no proof that elements of the U.S. military are interfacing with extraterrestrials. There's no proof, but there's a whole lot of anecdotal evidence that may be in fact happening. Of course, you have stories that came out in the 90s from people such as the late, Phil Schneider. Phil Schneider. Oh, yeah. Escaped me. Phil Schneider, whose testimony is incredible. And I don't know that we can believe everything that Phil said, because I think there was some mind control going on with Phil. But I think that the basic premise of his story was true. That he was working on the building. He was involved as a geologist in helping to build the deep underground military bases, and that he claimed that the government was in fact already interfacing with the Greys, and that there were joint bases that were already set up and agreements with the Greys where there was a sharing of technology. Now, is that actually happening? Who knows? I mean, we can only speculate, but I am thoroughly convinced that we have successfully reverse engineered crash retrievals to a degree, because the alien craft is using exotic materials that are not found on Earth. For example, I think we can say pretty definitively at this point that at least some of the crafts, the saucers and so forth, are utilizing a matter-antimatter reactor that uses exotic matter, element 115, as its primary energy source. In other words, exotic matter does not work like regular matter. It has different properties. and according to Bob Lazar, whose testimony, by the way, I absolutely believe, and so does George Knapp, who's one of the old school, sort of old gumshoe type investigators still left in the world. And George Knapp is a famous investigator out of Las Vegas, and I had an opportunity to talk with George Knapp, and I really trust George's reporting. He's old school, and so Lazar describes how these craft use a matter antimatter reactor, and they produce gravity waves, and there's a space time distortion, a warping of space time around the craft, and so forth, and that we have learned. Back in the 90s, we learned how to operate the craft. We could operate the craft, but we couldn't reproduce it exactly because of the exotic matter. And so we have been taking our most advanced technology, and we have been hybridizing what we can reverse engineer and reproduce from the alien craft. Using our conventional components, and we've been creating hybrid craft, and I believe that I think I told you this last time we talked. I had an encounter with one of these, what I believe was a hybrid craft, an aerospace vehicle that was using conventional components mixed with alien technology, and it was hovering 40 feet above my car. I could have thrown a stone at it, and it was hovering there for long enough for me to get a good long look at it. No propulsion system to speak of. It was a very windy night, and the craft was completely unmoved by the atmosphere. It had that angular body armor, like the F-17 Nighthawk, I believe is what the stealth fighter. But it didn't have any wings. It had stubs for wings, so it was not aerodynamic, and yet it was hovering effortlessly above my car. And I had my brother-in-law in the car with me. And so I believe I have witnessed reverse-engineered hybrid craft. So the question is, are we working in tandem? Do we have some kind of an agreement, an alliance with an alien race that is helping us to some degree manufacture our own advanced aerospace vehicles, or are we just manufacturing whatever we can from what we've been able to derive through reverse engineered components? It's complete speculation, but I think I would lean towards we are working with the Greys on some level, and it's happening miles beneath the surface of the Earth.
That's a dramatic statement. That's extremely dramatic. Can you speculate as to... Well, I think you kind of already have. I was going to ask if you could speculate as to the motive why we would want to collaborate. I can think of two reasons. One, to get technology to make our nation more superior to our opponents. And two, to avoid obliteration from a superior technology.
Both of those are certainly, I think, true. I would go so far as to say that... In the words of Richard Dolan, who I believe is the premier ufologist in the world, good friend of mine, Richard. In the words of Richard Dolan, there is a breakaway civilization. That when you take the kind of information, the implications involved in the revelation of an alien presence, and then furthermore the recovery and reverse engineering of alien technology that is hundreds of years, perhaps even thousands of years more advanced than anything we have today, and you cloak that whole thing in secrecy, and it's so secret that the vast majority of your military complex knows nothing about it, that it's just particular generals, elements of the intelligence agency, and military contractors. What you get is you get a program that has no oversight, none. You can't, for example, file a Freedom of Information Act to try and figure out, to try and get information on the reverse engineering of crash retrievals, of UFO crash retrievals. Why? Because the government is not directly overseeing, is not directly in charge of the reverse engineering. It's the military contractors that are. And so And so there is no Freedom of Information Act to get to force a military, a private company, military contractor, to turn over anything to you. And so when you have this situation where the public not only does not have the need to know, but can't know, and that the president of the United States does not have the need to know, and that the majority of the people working at the Pentagon cannot know, cannot even, they don't have the need to know, they don't have the clearance, then what you have effectively is you have a group of people who have no oversight from the rest of the human race over what they're developing and how they're using it. That is a breakaway civilization. And if you add into that equation the global elitists who might be involved in this at some level, you know, we could have, there could be real estate on Mars for all we know. These people can be, mining exotic matter on other planets right now and building a breakaway civilization. And maybe that explains some of their reckless behavior on Earth, in some of the policies and their contempt for the human species. They're, in their minds, they would already be evolving far beyond us, and they would have little care for, little concern for the present populace of planet Earth, because they would be so superior to us in their knowledge and technology. They're interfacing with an extraterrestrial race. That is effectively a breakaway civilization, and I absolutely concur with Richard Dolan. I do believe there is a breakaway civilization at this point, a faction of humanity that is perhaps interfacing with extraterrestrials and is doing things that we can't even imagine. They don't care about geopolitics anymore. It's beyond geopolitics at this point.
Would the location of this group, would it be subterranean? Would it be on Mars? What's your feeling?
Subterranean and off-world. And you know, I met a guy out in Las Vegas, and I can't remember his name, and I wish I could, but I can't. Who I met him at a conference that I was attending, and he was a very interesting guy, and he was selling a technology that he had there, and he and I had a chance to talk and spend some time together, and he comes from one of these, you know, Illuminati family lines. But he was detached. He didn't like what they were doing, and so he detached himself from the rest of his family. And he told me, and of course this is completely anecdotal, but he told me that one of his family members, his sister or his aunt or his cousin or something, had terminal cancer. And she called him because she had a dilemma. She had been contacted by other members of the family who told her, here's the deal. We have the cure for cancer. We have it. But if we give it to you, you have to move off world with us. You have to abandon your regular life, and you have to come into our sphere. And that sphere involves real estate on Mars.
Did and they indicate underground a reason
bases
why?
And a complete, it's the breakaway civilization. And they said, you will be sworn to secrecy. We will give you the cure to cancer, but you'll have to now live a different life. And from what I remember, she chose not to. She didn't want to do that. And now, completely anecdotal. However, I've heard other stories similar to this. So it's not beyond the scope of possibility that if we in fact are reverse engineering extraterrestrial technology that is far advanced to anything we have, and furthermore interfacing with these entities, that that there is a group of humans that are in possession of not only advanced aerospace technology, but all kinds of medical advances that they're not sharing with the rest of the public. And they've moved beyond, you know, as I said, beyond the concerns, the geopolitical concerns of planet Earth. They have real estate on Mars, and it sounds crazy. It sounds utterly crazy. But you know what else sounds crazy? The government admitting that UFOs are real, and even now, they've made a tacit admission that not only are UFOs real, and likely constitute quote unquote vehicles not made on this Earth, but also that alien abductions are real. So. So that's where we are. The fantastical is suddenly becoming stone cold fact.
Yeah, that's I'm reflecting back to when I was a child and I learned about Betty and Barney Hill and how they were mocked, and I thought, well, there was one thing Betty did there, and I was about 12 when I came to this realization. I just said, how did she know this one constellation was where it was at before we'd even discovered it?
That's right.
And I thought, that's really interesting. I thought, that's a lot of credibility. And this couple didn't seek notoriety in that. And I thought, well, they're not trying to get rich off this. But I want to go back and take a little historical backwards trip here. But before we go there, I want to ask you the question about purpose. So you have a bloodline of the Illuminati offered healing, but you have to go to Mars. Any speculation as to why they wanted her to relocate to Mars? Was she going to be a breeder, or what was it going to be?
You know, I have no idea. And again, it's completely anecdotal, that story. I have no idea. It struck me as the guy that was telling me the story struck me as completely genuine. He was very much alarmed. He was telling me, you know, sort of with in very muted terms. He didn't want everyone around us to hear what he was telling me. He was extremely sound of mind, this very intelligent young man, my age, not so young anymore, but at the time. And again, he was very alarmed by it, and he didn't know what to think or what to make of it. So who knows? I mean, it would be far beyond anything we've ever conceived in terms of a secret society or the Illuminati. You know, it would be something like the movie Elysium. I think people, that sci-fi movie that people might remember that came out maybe a decade ago, and it with Matt Damon, and basically there was this artificial structure in orbit above the Earth where all the elite lived, and they had these medical, you know, devices that they would get into that could cure them of any disease. But the Earth, planet Earth, was in planet Earth was in a state of complete and utter squalor, and the masses on Earth were living a completely different reality, and the elite were not really a part of the society of Earth anymore. They were part of Elysium, and I think that scenario is not that difficult to believe, at least from my perspective anymore. I think that might, if it's not already happening, it certainly is going to happen in the future, something like that, an Elysium-like scenario, where maybe the elites are already colonizing Mars. And I think we're way, 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 way beyond rockets. Way beyond rockets.
Stargates.
I'm sorry?
Stargates.
I absolutely think, and when you talk about stargates, what we're talking about effectively are wormholes. We're talking about Einstein-Rosen bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And Einstein-Rosen bridges, especially in light of the matter-antimatter reactor, the problem is most scientists are completely convinced that Einstein-Rosen bridges not only exist naturally in the universe, but can be produced. The problem is that it would take an enormous amount of energy to open one. And basically, when you open an Einstein-Rosen bridge, aka a stargate, you are not opening a gate to another dimension. No, you are opening a shortcut from one part of our universe to another. So it doesn't open a dimensional portal. It does in the sense that it's a bending of space-time, but it doesn't take you to a parallel universe. It takes you to a different location within our universe. It bends the fabric of space-time. And so we can produce, according to our physicists, we can produce an Einstein-Rosen bridge right now if we had an energy source that was powerful enough to bend space-time. Well, guess what? We do. According to Bob Lazar, it's a matter-antimatter reactor using element 115 or some other exotic element that can produce energy that far exceeds the capacity of our most powerful nuclear warheads. Many, many times over, millions of times more powerful than that. And so I do believe that Stargates, Einstein-Rosen bridges, I believe they're fact, not fiction.
Well, I'll give you a fact. We can teleport. Now, it's not quite the same thing as a Stargate, but it's based on matter displacement. They did the experiment, I think it was 2009.
That's right.
In Leipzig, Germany. So
that's
they teleported
right.
an object across the laboratory, and it was actually bilocated momentarily, too. So,
mm-hmm.
So the that's kind of a precursor step to a Stargate in my mind.
You're right. And you know, everything we're talking about here, that this teleportation you're talking about, where it's bilocated, and when I talk about matter-antimatter reactor, when I talk about Einstein-Rosen bridge, effectively what we're talking about here is Star Trek. Because think about it. All those technologies were prefigured in Star Trek. And there's reason to believe that some of those programs – that information was being supplied to the producers of shows like that to slowly condition the public to things that were coming down the pipe. And but you're absolutely right. They've conducted experiments because we know that matter has this strange property that at the subatomic level that Einstein referred to as a spooky action at a distance, where you can separate two particles that are intrinsically linked, and they stay in communication regardless of distance. Regardless of distance, you can put one on the moon and one on the Earth, and the particles are still linked as if they were right next to each other.
Yeah.
And Einstein called that spooky action at a distance. He didn't know how to explain it, and so this is not it's not supernatural. It's completely natural. It's a function of the natural universe. There are physics that are not yet understood, and if you understand those physics, then you can develop technology based on those physics, and so I think we are entering a time certainly in which. We're in a transitional generation. Things which were just science fiction in the past are very, very rapidly materializing right in front of our eyes.
This is I don't even know how to respond to this, except because I'm flooded with these ideas. I'll tell you something I did, and I didn't stay with it for more spiritual reasons than anything else, but I actually trained with Ed Dames for a short time on remote viewing. I don't know if you're familiar with that whole genre, but
very much so, yes.
And a guy named late Bill Pollack set that up, and Bill was Air Force Intel and stuff. And actually had known my father when I actually worked together at one time. And Bill said, "I want you to go there and see what you can learn from Ed." And I'm not bragging, but Ed said, "You're the star of the class." And I had some interesting experiences, but you know, I just want to bring one thing up that I think fits the Stargate situation with technology. When you remote view, you're given two sets of four-digit codes, and it supposedly takes you to a location, actually a physical location in the universe. Most of it's Earth-based because that's how remote viewing is typically used. And when you did the Stargate dialing that we saw on SG-1, they would have the lock-in codes. I think there were six of them, but it would go to frequency-based. And when I trained with Ed, oh gosh, 2002, and Stargate as a series started in 1997, I started watching it. And when I learned how you would give a target that you were trying to identify a 2-4-digit code, I thought, I wonder if these aren't both frequency applications that allows you to traverse space and time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any feelings on that?
Well, I absolutely believe in remote viewing. In fact, I go further. I believe that the human species is innately telepathic. We are inherently telepathic, that Adam and Eve could communicate telepathically, and beyond telepathic communication. It's a psychic connection that we have with each other, and I do not believe this belongs in the realm of the New Age. I believe that these are God-given abilities that Adam and Eve were fully capable of. And we have, and I'm probably because of the fall, we have lost the ability to tap into the full potential of our biology, of our biological architecture. Again, God-given biological architecture. Either we lost these capabilities because of degeneration and the fall, or God intentionally deadened us to some of these capabilities. He deactivated them for our protection. And so there's probably individuals, and it most likely has to do with your genetic line, family line, individuals who are more, let's put it this way, who are less broken in terms of these innate capabilities, these inherent capabilities. And those individuals they can still use the equipment. It's broken, but it's like a broken radio. And with the radio, you know, I often compare telepathy to a radio. So with a radio, you can have a radio, but if it's not tuned to a channel, all you get is noise. But if you can learn to tune the radio, then you can pick up signals.
The frequency, yeah.
The frequency, exactly
you
what
go.
You're saying. And so I do believe that that what these remote viewers are doing is they are individuals who have this genetic predisposition that they are more in tuned they have this natural function of human biology that is less broken, and they can still tune their radio, so to speak, and they're able to. And I don't think it's so much a projection. It's not like an out of body experience. Remote viewing is nothing. It has nothing to do with an out of body experience. You're fully conscious.
Yeah, you follow protocols.
Yeah, exactly. You follow protocols, and you can sit there and eat a sandwich and drink a cup of coffee while you're doing it. It's not like you're out of your body. And so what's happening is and people don't like this term, but I can think of no other. It's something to do with our psychic. It's a psychic function that we just don't understand that we have still. And that's part of the way, by the way, that the grays interface with us. Not part of the way. That's part of the reason why the grays are so successful with interfacing with us.
Yes.
Because gray aliens don't move their mouths when they talk. It's all telepathic communication. All telepathic. And by the way, I'm of the opinion that angels primarily communicate telepathically as well. So remote viewing falls into this. I think that remote viewing probably. I think Adam could remote view in a way that would absolutely shock us, and can see at a distance, because that's what remote viewing is. Hence, remote viewing. You can see things at a distance.
Prophets in the Bible, right?
What's that?
Like John, the end of days, prophets in the Bible.
Right.
I think that's
Yes, so there's some shadows of this, some indications of this kind of stuff, and also, if you can communicate telepathically with somebody, then you can project imagery from your mind into theirs, and that's what you can project. What you're seeing, they can see, or you can project thoughts and images. That's what the grays do. That's how they create screen memories in their abductees. And so when you start to think about prophecy and the interactions that prophets have with angels, I think there's a whole lot of remote viewing type, telepathy type stuff going on there. And people might object to that, but why? Why should we object to the notion that the human species was designed with this incredible capability, initially designed to be able to do this? I mean, we were created for fellowship with God. Just think about that. Just ruminate on that for a moment. I always say there's two purposes. The human species was designed and created for two purposes. Number one, we were created to be a part of the family of God, to be sons in the family, and to fellowship with the maker of the universe. Number one. Number two, we were created to govern the earth. So we were created to have fellowship in the family of God with the Maker himself and with our other siblings. And we were created to govern. And so we were equipped with all of the tools necessary to do those two things effectively. Adam was, Eve was, and then the fall. The fall, of course, ruined everything and set in motion genetic degeneration, which may be the reason why our radios are broken today.
Well, I think there's still surviving elements. I don't want to get too much into my own personal testimony, but I've had a long history of knowing a lot of times what's going to happen before it does, particularly on a personal level.
Right.
And the knowingness defies, you know, basic logic. You think, well, I could have predicted this, but I've had a lot of experiences that's not true. But I also think it's extra dimensional. That's my sense of this. I think the power involves traversing the three-dimensional world we live in. If you get into the fifth dimension, you know, space and time are irrelevant. You can see all events at one time.
That's right.
When you look at, you know, the quantum physics model. Mm-hmm. And I tend to think this is what we're talking about. And I think Stargate technology is like the mechanical manifestation of what we're talking about. You know, I don't know what you call it, spiritually, psychologically, but you're really opening up a universe that's going to give people headaches, but it is who we are. And I'll give you one concrete example. So this will help the audience, I think. There are prayer studies out there, and I will say this from a research standpoint, the level of significance you have to have for a study. So in other words, when you do one study, you have to duplicate it in the same exact form, and you can end up with a meta-analysis with several studies of the same type at the same time. And just this is just for the audience's benefit. And you have to get to a level of confidence that your research results based on existing formula would be less than 5% due to chance. And we call that level of confidence. And so the studies I'm going to talk about here just for a second don't meet the level of significance, meaning there needs to be more research done. But there is a clear trend curve. And here's mm-hmm. the trend curve on prayer studies. They've done these double-blind studies, well-designed study, where they'll have people, let's say, in a hospital in a heart attack ward. Let's say they're in San Francisco. And they're the control for the group. They don't get prayed for. Their condition's known. But you're tracking their medical results, but there's no spiritual intervention. So let's go to Houston. And there you have people with the diagnosed same conditions. Average prognosis of life expectancy might be 6 months. And so they pray for the people in Houston. So you get these people that come in and pray, and they pray over their first name, last initial, but they don't know the location. They just pray to that. And to me, that's like the four-digit code you get in remote viewing. Mm-hmm. You're praying to the name and the initial. And what they found was the survival rate for the people prayed for were tremendously higher than the control group that did not get prayed for. And I think this is part of what we're talking about.
I think you're absolutely right. And now you start to think about prayer. When I was a young man, I used to think, like, how does prayer work, right? How do we even communicate with God, number one? But two, how does prayer work? And you know, maybe the old medieval perception was that there was an angel, you had a personal angel, like a guardian angel, that would listen to your prayer and then dispatch to heaven, you know, and deliver your prayer in written form or whatever, right? The medieval perception. But now I think we're beginning to understand the let's call it the physics behind some of what's being described in the scriptures. In other words, if we are connected to one another on this psychic level, and not psychic in the New Age sense, but in the biological sense, let's say, we're connected to one another on this deep level. We can call it a spiritual level, would be the same kind of terminology here. Then we are, in fact, not only communicating with one another and being able to have these, what you were describing, with premonitions and so forth, and being empathic with one another. We human beings are definitely empathic. Then we can also be communicating with angels in the same way, and with God in the same, certainly with God in the same way. The Bible says that God is spirit. And so prayer makes a whole lot more sense when you start to think about it this way. And it just fascinates me because it, you know, people think that so many of the people, secular people, think that the scriptures and Christianity is outdated, and it is. Our medieval view of the scriptures is outdated, but not the scriptures themselves.
Yes, exactly.
And so once we, as we upgrade our understanding of the universe, the Bible becomes more relevant, not less relevant. The explanatory power of the biblical narrative becomes more powerful. It becomes clearer than it was in the past, because it begins to sync more with what we understand about the universe, and the way communication works, and as we explore these innate abilities that the human species has, then you begin to understand prayer a little bit more. It's not like a magic. It's not magic. There's something very deep and profound about our interconnectedness that we have with one another, the connectedness that we have with other conscious beings that are not human, i.e. angels, for example, and the connectedness that we have with the maker of the universe.
Yeah, that's a lot to take in, but I totally agree. You know, I look at it this way, too. If anyone believes in the Big Bang, and so you have to ask yourself, what were we one quantum second before the Big Bang? Well, we were all enjoined in what we'd become throughout the universe. Every life form, every physical entity was enjoined in one small little representative dot. And then here comes the explosion. And I've always maintained that the connection between all life forms and even humans in the Earth was born of that connection that's never really been separated.
That's right.
But here's the question I have, though. And I asked Ed Dames this question, and he didn't really give me an answer. He said, that's the question, Dave. I said, I believe in interspecies evolution. I don't believe that we came from monkeys, but I believe we evolved within our own selves. I mean, we're 4 inches taller than we were during the Civil War as males. Mm-hmm. So I said, are we evolving into these abilities or evolving away from them because we become so dependent on speech? What do you think?
I think we're devolving. We're clearly devolving. Although I do not subscribe to macroevolution, in which one species evolves into another.
Exactly.
I do subscribe to microevolution, mm-hmm. in which there is a built-in, by God, designed range, spectrum of adaptation. And that spectrum of adaptation can be quite extreme. You can get all the marsupials in Australia from one single marsupial. That's how wide-ranging I believe that built-in mechanism of adaptation is, that the maker designed in the creatures. And I believe human beings have a spectrum of adaptation. Ours is probably more narrow than other life forms because we have the ability to think. And to build things and to build shelter and wear clothes. So we don't need as wide a spectrum as adaptation as other animals. Animals need to be able to adapt to a changing environment. And I think that microevolution, again, adaptation, is a fingerprint of a maker, of a designer. And again, starkly different from macroevolution, where everything has evolved from an amoeba. Rather, there's a set of creatures that were created in the beginning and given a wide spectrum of adaptation, and that they can adapt and micro-evolve within their species. And that's my view. That's my view. And you know, when you talk about the the Big Bang and everything being interconnected, people don't understand that is a biblical concept.
I know.
It's my favorite verse in the Bible, very favorite verse in the Bible, Colossians 1:15, where it says that the Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation, for in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. In other words, this is why I refer to Jesus, the Son of God, as the singularity. He is the Big Bang. He's the singularity. All things are bound together in him. And that's what the Bible says. That's what Paul says. So Paul, way back in the first century AD is expressing the singularity concept of the Big Bang before all of our modern day physicists, except Paul is saying that Jesus is that singularity.
You know, isn't it interesting that I'll back up. My friend Vance Davis, very quickly here, ex-NSA, I've known him for 28 years, and he told me in his NSA training that they were actually taught Genesis 6, but they didn't call it that. They said there was a war out in the cosmos, the bad guys lost, and they got cast to Earth. And so that, to me, was the fallen angels. But he said they wanted to basically commandeer the human soul and get back at God's prized possession, but they weren't able to. And this is before, he told me this in 1993, before transhumanism was ever a concept or a word discussed. Mm. And he said, so they decided to try to morph human beings as much as they can. And what do they call it today? Merging man and machine singularity. So that's on right, one hand, you have Jesus as the singularity. They can't overcome that, so they're trying to create their own parallel singularity that's just flat evil.
That's right. Yeah, and you know, you talk about the Bible talks about woe to those sorceresses who make their magical bands to capture souls. And something like that. I can't remember the exact scriptural reference, but something like that. I forget if I put it in my book or not. But one thing about the abduction phenomenon, if you read the research, the data, and it is real scientific data, you will discover that there's this strange black box that shows up in a lot of abduction accounts. And the black box is often positioned behind the abductee's head as they're lying on a table, you know, on the craft. And the abductees, many abductees have described this, that they feel like their soul is being sucked out of their body and captured into this black box. And some abductees have described, you know, then a clone of their body being brought in, and then their soul going back into their body from this black box. And it sounds so fantastical, but it shows up so many times in abduction accounts. So I think there is, and I don't understand it, and I don't know what the goal is, and I don't understand it at all. But I think there is something to that, that there's something about the human soul that is unique, and that other entities, other sentient beings are trying to manufacture, are trying to duplicate, are trying to capture, who knows. But what you said, what your friend told you, just triggered that in my mind. So I think there is some validity to that.
Well, there's another thought, excuse me, I've had too, that kind of goes along these lines. It'll have to be kind of a short answer on your part, but I look at world leaders today. We've never had a period in history where world leaders marched uniform on anything, ever. But yet it just happened with COVID, the lockdowns, and all the scientific nonsense they went along with, non-scientific nonsense, all the lies they told to people, the destruction that went on. Lockstep, third world countries to first world countries. And I'm thinking, what's responsible for this? Now, I know this is a bad conspiracy theory, but we know most of our world leaders today did some training in one form or another with the Young Global Leaders Program or the previous programs to that, mm-hmm. at the World Economic Forum. And I'm wondering how much of this is demonic possession from the survivors of the dead giants before the flood.
You know, here's my thoughts on that. Every time that
we got a minute. I'm sorry.
Okay, I'll try and wrap it really quick. Every time that we encounter demon possessed people in the Bible, they're ravenous, out of their minds, foaming from the mouth, tossing their hosts into the fire, screaming, yelling. It's not coherent. They're not calm, and so it's hard for me to imagine a world leader being possessed by one of these spirits and be calm and collected and be able to speak intelligently and interact in society and not look like a lunatic. That's my short answer.
And we're seeing a lot of that from world leadership today.
Then the theory might have some validity then.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, just watch Ardern, the Prime Minister of New Zealand. I look at her and I get a repulsed feeling of demonic possession. It's a real strong feeling. And I get it when I look at Trudeau. And I look at their eyes, and subjectively, and I know it's very subjective, but I see the same evil emanating from their eyes, the same almost emotionless, snake-like mentality that they don't care about people. There's no empathy. There's a mission, and their singular focus on the mission, to hell with everybody else. And that's what I see for Joe Biden in his demented fashion. I see some of those same traits in him. And I think a lot of it's demonic possession. Okay, very quickly, we got to do justice here. Tim has a book that I keep reading and rereading, Birthright. It's really good. Tim, where can people follow your good work?
You can follow me on YouTube, Timothy Alberino. I'm always posting content on there. You can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, Timothy Alberino, on my website, timothyalberino.com. And I have a conference coming up here from the 6th to the 7th of May in Nashville, Tennessee. We're going to be talking about transhumanism, aliens, UFOs, and Bible prophecy. And it's me and some other great speakers, including Joe Ellen from Steve Bannon's War Room podcast, and who's one of the leading experts on transhumanism. So,
wow.
You can get tickets at birthrightconference.com, birthrightconference.com.
Okay. We'll publish that, too, on our website. When we publish our interview, we'll publish that, and this will air on Monday. So
great.
We'll have it up on our website then, and people can track that. We're flat out of time, Tim, but thank you for a fascinating hour. It was absolutely tremendous. Can't
thank
wait
you.
To have you back on.
It was my pleasure, definitely.
Take care.
You, too.